Okay, this is Fabio Akira again for the Ruby on Rails Podcast Brazil. Again at QCon, and now with Matt Antonetti. Is that the way? Correct way?
Matt Amonetti.
Amonetti. And he is one of the core developers for MERB. And he was kind of trying to convince me to switch from Rails to MERB, and I'm almost convinced. So he will try to convince...
Wait. you told me you were convinced.
So you'll try to convince all of the audience as well. So hi, Matt, and please can you tell us about what you do and how did you come about Ruby and then MERB?
Bom dia, Fabio. So I started as a Ruby developer, and I learned Ruby before I learned Rails, but it was a very short transition because the reason why I moved to the Ruby world was because of Rails. I started 3 years ago now. I was working for a company that was evaluating different MVC solutions, and we had a very bad, it was a very bad PHP application that was written. And I came to the project with some Java background and other languages, and I had to work with PHP. And basically, after 2 years of development, the PHP application was not scaling anymore. It was really hard to maintain. The code was really bad, and there was no test. And I was in charge of evaluating different MVC frameworks, and we looked at Symfony, we looked at Django, and at Rails. And I fell in love with Ruby, the language itself, not with Rails right away, but the Ruby language was so awesome. So that's how I got started, and then I convinced my company to use Rails, and then I became a contributor to Rails, and I contributed stuff like RecDB tasks. So every time you do RecDB create, you can think of me. But anyway, I contributed to Rails for a few years. I won some Hackfest and stuff like that. I really enjoyed building client application because I started my own company and I built some big application with Rails. Really loved it. But it was lacking some of the flexibility I needed for my big clients. And I started using MERB at version 0.3. To deal with uploads and stuff like that. And I really like the flexibility and the fact that we're closer to the Ruby language. And I started using both MERB and Rails. And then I got more and more involved with MERB. And I had a client app that was running with 8 to 10 million requests a day on MERB. And I spent more time on MERB than Rails until I totally switched to MERB. And now I only do MERB. So this is how I came to MERB.
Okay. And by the way, just as a side subject, so that people can understand why the accent, because you are actually French, and you said that you are from Latin America, actually.
Actually, no. I'm from almost everywhere but Latin America. My wife is Bolivian.
Oh, yeah, your wife is Bolivian.
My wife is Bolivian with our grandma from Brazil. But I'm personally, I was born in France, and my mom is from North Africa, and she's Spanish, and my dad is Italian. And I lived in England, and now I live in San Diego, California. So
That's so people understand that not everything comes from the United States. So
actually, that's an interesting question. In the MERB core team, I think we only have one American.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, I think Yehuda is the only American because Daniel is from Australia. We have Michael from Russia, but he lives in Ukraine. And we have Fabian that lives in Belgium. And I'm forgetting some people, but Carl is actually he grew up in Belgium and moved to America, so he's American but from different backgrounds. So.
Okay, and you have your own business in San Diego, you said, what you do right now.
Correct, so I have a consultancy company. We do training, so we offer MERB training. I do also Rails training, and we do development for different companies, so smaller startups and big clients, Fortune 100, this kind of stuff. So.
Okay, so I think at this time, everybody knows that there is Ruby on Rails, but Ruby on Rails is not Ruby. It's one web framework, and we have other web frameworks that are coming up, and MERB is the most well-known other framework that is not Rails. So now we have Sinatra, we have many other frameworks, and I think one thing that people get worried about when they see now this because once we only had Rails, now we had like half a dozen options, mm-hmm. and they have this fear that the Ruby world is kind of becoming like the Java world, where you have Spring, Struts, Web, something, What are you your thoughts about this?
I think choice is good. I think that having many options is a good thing. I think that the Ruby community is growing, and now we see people with different needs. Rails addresses one need in a very good way. It's a very good answer to a lot of problems. But often you have different needs and you need to be able to do something else. And these different frameworks actually are great because they will answer these different needs. And they will also push the main framework to do something else. For instance, MERB being different than Rails, we were able to contribute a lot of code back to Rails. Like, for instance, now you can use Rack in Rails, and that's because we had that inside MERB and we ported it back to Rails. So I think that having a bit of competition, even though we talk at a different audience, is good for everybody.
Yeah, and obviously another strange thing, a friend of mine that is from the Java world, he was wondering that it's very amazing that in such a small community, we have so much drama going on, like when Zed Shaw was talking, and now Giles, and then now this MERB versus Rails stuff. Do you feel this tension going on in the Ruby community? Why do you think it's so?
I don't think that's a true statement. I think that first, the Ruby community is not that small. We have about 1 million Rails Ruby users, most of them being Rails users. But we have a strong Ruby community. Gartner was saying that we should get about 4 million Ruby developers in the next few years. So the community is definitely growing, and we have strong personalities because Ruby is an opinionated language, and people joining the community like that. And if you compare to other communities, we actually don't have that much drama. And I think it's because we don't have that much drama that people pick on small stories and make them big, because the focus is on only few people. To answer your question about the Rails and MERB drama, I actually posted something on my blog, merbis.com, where I actually said there was no drama. There was just people arguing different arguments. And I think that's a very good point. We need that. We need to be able to challenge ideas and to think maybe differently. And that's what happened. Also, we have a really good relationship with the Rails core team. Most of the MERB core team were very involved with Rails before, so we know people personally, and there's no hard feelings. We have a lot of respect for the Rails team, especially DHH.
Yeah, and okay, that said, I think we can left the drama behind and start the more practical stuff. So for a web developer that's already into Ruby, what are the most compelling features of MERB that set it apart from Ruby on Rails?
So if you like modularity, so if you need to do more than what Rails gives you, for instance, you need to be able to push your application a bit further. If you need less, MERB is great for that. So MERB comes in different flavors. The main flavor, when you generate an application, looks more or less the same as Rails. So you have all the tools you need, including authentication, including caching, and stuff like that that comes for free for you. But it's an opt-in and opt-out solution, meaning that you can choose components and you might want to remove them, you might want to replace them. So in the context of flexibility, MERB is better. We also have better performances. So if you need to use less memory or if you need to deal with more requests per second, MERB would be better for you. And finally, I think my last point would be to say that if you like Ruby as a language, and Matt's made this statement, Matt being the author of Ruby, in MERB we try to be closer to the language. We don't try to build a DSL on top of Ruby itself. So if the DSL is great when you get started, but if you want to get rid of that and actually use the proper language and make it faster, MERB is a good choice.
Okay, MERB just reached 1.0, I think a few days or a few weeks ago, and we were just trying 1.1 yesterday. Do you think that now MERB is stable, that people can build over it without being nervous of the next version breaking everything apart, and how does this process going to happen from now on?
That's a very good question. So we went through 5 release candidates for 1.0, and it took a little while. We actually took a while to come to 1.0. It took us 2 years. And the reason why we did that is because 1.0 has a fixed API. People from the Rails community might not really understand that because Rails doesn't have that. But inside MERB, we have some API calls. So every time you call something, you call a method,
we actually lock this method and we say this method is a public method. We're not going to change it until the next major release. So people who tried MERV before 1.0 might be surprised that things change. But until 2.0, we're not going to break the API, so you can really trust the code right now. It's going to be stable. It's already very well tested. We released 1.0.1 just to be able to use the new version of Data Mapper. And we're going to keep track on moving on until 2.0. That should be released hopefully next year.
Okay. MERV was created by Ezra Zygmuntowicz from EngineYard, and now it's currently maintained by Yehuda Katz, if I'm not mistaken. And maybe this is another thing that people, it's not fear, but they have this notion that because it came from EngineYard, that maybe MERV would just be just follow EngineYard's agenda. What do you say about that?
That's a very good question. So MERV did not come from EngineYard. Ezra wrote MERV, who started the first version of MERV, was working for EngineYard. That's a huge difference. EngineYard has been helping with the development. They actually gave time to for the developers to work and help the Ruby community by building MERV. In no time in the history of MERV, EngineYard ever told us to do anything. They never told us you need to do that. That's a priority because we need that for a client. However, EngineYard is supporting us financially, but also by offering support for the enterprise. So they offer paid support for people who want to develop MERV application and they might have a problem. They will have an area of experts. They will have experts working on the app for you.
Okay. And of course, you don't work for EngineYard.
So. No, I do not.
And recently, you also had the first MERV event. It was MERV Camp, that's the name, that was in San Diego. What do you think about more events on MERV in other places? Do you think it was a successful event? People are already gathering up to know more about MERV.
So MERV Camp was a great event. We had 150 people came. We had at least the same amount of people watching the live stream. The idea is that we wanted to do a cheap conference. It was only $50, which in America is actually really cheap because conferences run around, you know, $1,000 to $1,500 for RailsConf, which was, I think it's
$1,500.
$800.
Yeah.
And a conference like QCon is actually even more than that. Our goal was not to make money, but to share knowledge. That's why we had live stream. That's why you can go to the website and watch all the videos for free. What we want to do is to create local communities. We've been working a lot with the Japanese community to create a MERV community over there. We also want to bridge the Rails and the Ruby community, and we want people to get together. We want people to be interested in Sinatra, in Waves, in Mac, which is another framework. We want people to come together, and I really hope that the Brazilian audience, the Ruby community, will get together and discuss these different frameworks, different solutions, and just have fun and learn and play with Ruby.
Exactly. I think the main thing is that people have to go to Ruby. Whatever the framework they're using, Ruby is the key, and they should learn the ways of Ruby. Speaking about the language itself, what is it so compelling in the language Ruby that makes you choose it against, let's say, Python or other dynamic languages?
I think I really enjoy writing Ruby. Like, it makes me smile when I write Ruby. it's really one of these languages that I think is very natural. And I was talking with Mats about that, and I was telling him, I really like your language. Like, and I think the reason why this language is so great is because Japan went through a lot of problems. I remember my history teacher was telling me that Japan was the best country in the world because they could survive anything. And they could adapt to any problem. You know, they had the atomic bomb, they had wars, they're in the middle of a place where nobody likes them, there's no resources for them. It's like a really challenging situation. But they always find a positive way of acting. And that's the feeling I have when I use Ruby. I think there's always this adaptability and this way of being very pleasant to me. And I really enjoy that. And I love other languages too. And we really look, when we work on MERV, we look at other implementation like Django, for instance, in Python. So I need to read a lot of Python code. It's great too, but I still love Ruby better.
That's a good answer. And the things on MERV that I was impressed when I saw it first, it was the modularity. So yes. You showed me how MERV is divided. And for some people, it may come as a surprise that when you install the full package, it comes with lots of gems, But that's one of the keys where you can opt in or out of stuff. So he showed me that it was pretty easy. Unfortunately, this is a podcast, so I can't show code here. So you have to trust my word in that. And the other feature that I like that I like a lot is the MERB slices. Can you describe the slices feature?
Yeah, so MERB slices is a very interesting concept. That's also one of my favorite features. So the idea is that, especially in the enterprise world, and also in my own personal work as a consultant, I have a tendency to rewrite the same features over and over. For instance, you might write a blog over and over. For every single client, they want to have a blog. You might need to have static pages, you know, like about us and, you know, where do we live and stuff like that. You might need to have a wiki. And I always have to rewrite that. So, you know, we have some tricks where you can have like a generator that does some of the stuff like that. But it's really annoying that you have to re-code and you cannot share this code. So we came up with a concept looking at Rails engines, which was an implementation that existed in the Ruby world, but especially Django applications, which are just small pieces of application that work, at least the slices work this way. They are standalone applications, so you can run your blog on your own. It's a normal MERB app, but you can package it inside a gem, and you can mount it inside your own application. So you would go to mywebsite.com/blog, and it will access your mounted slice. And you can also customize it without touching the code. You can just overwrite the view or extend it. And you can have a lot of different slices and just share them. You can actually even sell them. You could come up with a great CMS and just sell it. That's something that I really like also.
Yeah, and this slices feature, it may not be so obvious while listening, but I saw one of the gems that MERBs come with is an authentication that it's not only like, it's not like RESTful authentication, which has a generator for stuff in Rails. It has its own login page and all the views. And if you think about it, it's a separated project with all the app and MVC the folders and lib folders and test folders. So it's self-contained. What are the main slices that you already have in MERB that's good to talk about?
So at the moment, we don't have a lot of great slices, and that's something we're working on. And we hope the community will also help us by telling us what they need and by building some of the slices. One interesting slice I'd like to mention is the one from FiveRuns. So FiveRuns is a company here in the U.S. that offers statistical reports. So basically, they give you information about your application, how it's being used. And they created a slice that checks on your application and gives you a summary of what's slow, what's not slow, how much time you spend in the database, how much time you spend in the views. And they give you this report, and you can share it with other people. And that's a very interesting use of a slice. They also have a plugin for Rails, by the way. I don't want to forget that.
Okay.
But it's a very interesting use of a slice. We also have the password slice that you mentioned that comes with authentication. I personally wrote e-commerce slice for a client. Unfortunately, I cannot release it. But basically, I'm working on it at the moment, and it's a catalog slice. So it displays all the different information that we have in the catalog. And so we can use different databases for different stores, and we would just reuse the code. So that's just an example.
Yeah, and the way I see it, you could build, for instance, a slice for a social networking, a slice for a shopping cart, and then you can just pick and choose all the slices and put them together in one application. Is that how you would think about it?
Absolutely, and you could just customize them based on the needs you have.
Okay, awesome. I think that's one feature that many Railers are going to love about. And another thing that I like it a lot was, and I wasn't aware of that, is that MERB supports a way of deploying that's very interesting, that master thing. Can you describe what it is?
Are you talking about the master and the workers?
Yeah.
We have our own built-in web server. Well, it's not the entire web server, but you see, when you use Rails, you need to use Mongrel Rails that would handle different Mongrels. We have that built-in inside MERB, so you can use different adapters because we use Rack. So you can use Athene, Ebb, or Mongrel. And what we do have is we have a master process that gets started, and then we create many forks, so many workers that share memory if you use Ruby Enterprise. And these workers will handle different ports. So they are like the Mongrels that you have in Rails. The only difference that they share information like mod passenger, but you can kill one and automatically it will come back right away. So if you deploy your application, so let's say you package your entire application, you put all the gems, and you push it to the server, like a normal Rails app, it's running. And now you need to redeploy it. What you do is you push your code, and it's going to start new workers and send information to the running workers and tell them, you need to die now. We're going to replace you. And once this one died, the other ones just come back up. So there is no downtime at all. And that's something that we can actually optimize even more in the future by adding SwiftDeploy to it, which is a library that handles static requests, and that would be able to do like Apache does, where it would be able to spawn more workers for you based on the load you have.
Yes, and this is a cool feature because you can think instead of in a VPS where you would set up Nginx, and then you have to set up a proxy balancer, and you have a static number of processes with money looking after them, so if one goes down, it brings it up again. With this new setup, you can have Nginx, this master mer process, and this master process will control all the others.
Correct.
Okay, but you would still need Mongrel because of the you don't have a RAM monitor yet. So if it grows too much, you can't kill it and restart it.
You mean Monit, right?
Yeah, that's what Monit does.
But yes.
But you still can't drop Monit altogether.
You can use something else on Monit if you want to. Right now, we don't have a way inside the master process to verify the memory usage. That's something we're working on with SwiftDeploy to be able to do that. The idea is that we want to avoid going through one more layer, and we want to be more self-contained so you can just deploy your application.
Exactly.
And the master process will be able to monitor every single worker, including itself, and if needed, we'll be able to restart or to send a warning or something like that.
Awesome. And what about the Windows support? Do you have MERB running on Windows? What's the current state of MERB on Windows?
So Ruby on Windows is challenging.
Exactly.
It's the truth. Now, I have a very good news. My friend Luis from Argentina released a new version of one-click installer, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that includes the new version of RubyGems and also a new version of Rake. So that's very good. We spent a lot of time with Luis working during the 1.0RC time to make sure that every single component would work with Windows. And you can run MERB on Windows right now. DataMapper also works on Windows, DataMapper being the ORM that comes with the MERB stack. You can use ActiveRecord if you want to, but we suggest people to use DataMapper, and it has its own drivers, so that now works with Windows. However, we still advise people that it's better not to use Ruby on Windows because it's not yet optimized. Now, we also spend a lot of time and energy. We want to change that. We want to be able to say Ruby on Windows works fine. We're really targeting. We want the help of the Ruby community to change this fact.
Awesome. And for those of you that don't know Luis Lavena, that was in Rails Summits explaining Ruby on Windows and all the challenges that he has, compiler and stuff like that. But maybe we will have a compelling reason, a compelling project in the Windows world. And about MERB, about DataMapper, actually, I forgot to ask about that. What is DataMapper? How different it is from ActiveRecord, both in its concept and in what it does?
So ActiveRecord is great. I'm going to talk about DataMapper. I don't want people to think that DataMapper is better than ActiveRecord. I think DataMapper addresses different issues. So the reason why I like DataMapper is because he has this concept of data objects. And the way it works is that DataMapper defines an API of few methods that are defined, like, for instance, read many, update, delete. I think that's about it. So there are very few methods that exist to access your data store. And your data store can be a database, but it might be something else. You might consume an API, for instance, a Salesforce API, or you might use CouchDB, or you might use an XML file, or you can use a YAML file. And instead of having to deal with all these different type of instances, what you do is you write an adapter. And this adapter knows how to consume the API, or how to read the database, and just exposes few methods to a data mapper. So data mapper can just focus on the query itself, so the conditions, and pass that to the adapter. What that means is that in Active Record, you use different drivers that were written for every single different database, but they don't have the same API. So Active Record needs to be smart and understand all of that. Also, Active Record forces you to write some sort of SQL in some instances, and that's not compatible with all the different databases, when DataMapper actually does everything in Ruby. And that offers a lot of flexibility, because now you can open different repositories and you can take data from Postgres and push them to MySQL, or you might just do some backup between systems. You can do a lot of flexibility on one model. You can say, this model is defined this way for this database, but you can also access the legacy database with this other schema. So it really offers a lot of flexibility. I personally wrote an adapter to consume Google Video, and I was able to do... Google Video doesn't have an API, so I had to use an HTTP scraper, so I had to go and read the information from the HTTP and consume it. I actually ended up writing my adapter in 80 lines of code. And I was really impressed, because I just had to define a few methods and say, this is how you read one based on the condition, and the condition is taken care of by DataMapper. And then this is how you write something. And my API was very simple. My adapter was just reading one and reading many. But 80 lines of code, and that I can actually maintain easily, I was very impressed.
Yes, and speaking of adapters, there is still some adapters missing in DataMapper. It supports MySQL, Postgres, I think SQLite. What else?
So the adapter for RDBMS, so database systems, we do have the three you mentioned, Postgres, MySQL, and SQLite3. We don't have an Oracle adapter right now, so hopefully somebody will be able to help us with that. It's not really hard, but we do have a lot of other adapters. We have an LDAP adapter that was released recently. We have a Salesforce adapter. We have, I don't know if the Flickr adapter is available publicly or not. We have a YAML adapter, I believe. A lot of people wrote a lot of different type of adapters depending on the API they need. But you can think about, for instance, YAML, right? So in Rails, we're used to using fixtures. And fixtures, you always need to load them and to do a lot of stuff. You could really easily use the adapter for YAML to just pretend you access the database, but instead of accessing the database, you just use your YAML file.
Oh, instead of reloading the test database all the time, for instance.
Exactly.
And another thing about DataMapper, you were talking about how you access several different data stores, and the one that I'm the most interested in right now is CouchDB. So tell us, how does it work with CouchDB? What's the state of this integration?
So actually, that's an interesting question, because I do not use DataMapper with CouchDB.
Okay.
I should explain that. I spent the afternoon with the CouchDB guys, and Chris Anderson, JChris on GitHub, wrote a library called CouchRest, which basically maps the concept of CouchDB objects into a simple library in Ruby where you can push your views and access documents. And I worked with him to try to define how we could use that as an ORM, and now we're extracting the ORM part into its own object. The problem with DataMapper and CouchDB is that DataMapper is set up with the concept of relationship between object and with associations and with all the stuff you normally do with a database type system or with an API. The problem is CouchDB doesn't work this way. So it really doesn't map very well. We do have an adapter for CouchDB that works well, but that's not the recommended way. If you want to learn CouchDB, the way CouchDB works, you should not really do that, because everything you do is all more in views and in JavaScript and stuff like that. So I would recommend you don't use DataMapper for this case. And that's exactly the kind of example where MERB is great, because you don't have to use DataMapper. You don't have to use Active Record. You can use just what you need.
So you can just use CouchRest directly and do what you need to do. And you said that you were experimenting with CouchDB, and it's not MERB, but I want to know your impressions on what the kinds of projects that you've been using CouchDB and how it's been behaving. What are your feelings about it?
So CouchDB is a very, very interesting project for me, and I was passionate about it because I started working on two different applications for clients, and both of them had a very complex model system. So if you wanted to access a document, you had to go through many joins. And you had the normal RDBMS system where everything was normalized, but everything was getting really slow, so you had to cache everything, and it was very hard to know how to go through all the entire model. But when you think about it as documents, you can actually just define two or three documents, and inside the document, you might have different objects. But everything is way simpler when you use CouchDB. And that worked very well. I did a lot of benchmarks. There was some optimization that was done on CouchDB side. It's hard to think outside of the RDBMS world. When you've been developing for many years, you're kind of used to create relationship and to work with all of that and have joined tables and stuff like that. When you need to think about documents, it's a bit hard. However, it ends up being way faster because now you don't actually go through all these joins. You only make one request and you might get many objects. But on top of that, it's built on REST, which means that you can use etags and you can do caching and you can use load balancing. And there's replication, so you can have two different databases and they can just talk to each other. There's no locking mechanism anymore. So you get a lot of features for free, and CouchDB really maps very well to the web type development in a lot of cases, not all the time though.
Mm-hmm. But so you feel that it's a viable alternative for production use right now?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's just a bit hard to get started. I know that Chris Anderson and other people are working on a book that's going to be released for free. I think in January they have the first version.
From O'Reilly, yeah.
From O'Reilly.
Yeah.
And documentation is a bit lacking right now. But if you go through the wiki and you learn a bit more about it, it's great. It's production ready. I know the BBC is using it. There's a lot of other people using it. It's the same concept as the simple DB system from Amazon. So it's great. A lot of features are coming also, like a full text search will be built in inside it.
Were you able to convince them to not use Lucene and use Sphinx instead?
We actually discussed about that. So the reason why I don't want to use Lucene and Solr is because it's Java. And I don't want to maintain Java code and Ruby code and JavaScript code and, you know, Erlang code if I have to do some crazy stuff. And what they told me was that they were going to try to work with the Sphinx guys to get it to work with Sphinx. But they might do something even better. They might have a built-in full-text search that might not be as, you know, full-featured as Lucene and Solr, but you might get 90% of what you need for the web. And that will be built in Erlang, being really fast. Mm-hmm. We also saw kind of ways of doing full search text right now with using views. So I'm pretty excited about what they do.
Okay, awesome. And now coming back to MERB again, and there's another talk that we were having about MERB with JRuby. We're talking to JRuby guys. What's the state of MERB on JRuby now?
So MERB on JRuby is actually really fast. The JRuby guys did some benchmarks, and they tried Rails, and they tried MERB. And MERB, because MERB is fully multi-threaded, so there's no mutex at all.
Oh, by the way, explain to the audience what is the difference of what MERB does and what Rails does for multi-threading.
Okay, that's good. Until 2.2, Rails was not multi-threaded, so it was not thread safe. What that means is you have one request coming, it needs to finish before another request can be handled by Rails, okay? And in 2.2, and it's still not released yet, but they're working on making it thread safe, meaning that you can handle multiple requests at once. And MERB since day one was multi-threaded. What that meant is that you could handle a lot of requests at once because we wanted to deal with upload and stuff like that. The difference is that in Rails, you had a non-thread safe environment, and now you need to try to make it thread safe. And the way to do that is to set up some sort of mutex, so you will lock all the threads at once and then unlock them. So you just do that so things keep in sync. In MERB, we don't use any mutex at any time, so we don't have to deal with this challenge. And the Rails team is, what the Rails team is doing is really, really hard, because they need to go and find all these different places and make sure that everything works fine when the code was never tested in the multi-threaded environment. The good news is that you can choose. You don't have to be multi-threading in Rails. You can still say, I want to use only one thread.
Mm-hmm. And because of that, in JRuby, you already could use only one instance and have it handle many threads. And because it's, I think it's small and it doesn't share any state, it's fair to say that it's faster.
Yeah.
In JRuby especially.
So Merby is way faster than Rails when you do any type of benchmarks, because you know it's basically it's a rewrite of Rails that was done after 2 years of experimenting with Rails. It's a very clean code and simple code. So it is way faster right now. You can go to my website and see the benchmarks. But especially in JRuby, because JRuby has native threads, so you can open a lot of threads at the same time. When MRI, which is the Ruby implementation that most people use with 1.8, don't have as many. Well, it's a complex system, but basically it's not as easy as the way Java does it. So JRuby can open all these connections at once, and they're not limited. The major advantage I see in JRuby is that you have all these threads. So if you have a lot of connections coming at once, it's actually way faster. It can also handle a lot of, if you have a big server and you have multi-cores, JRuby is going to be a great option. However, JRuby actually is a bit slow to load right now and takes a little while to warm up. So I personally don't use it in production, but I really have a lot of hope for JRuby, and I think there's a lot of potential for it. I think there's a lot of people already have a Java application. They want to be able to consume it, and that's a great way of doing it.
Okay, and are there new features that you are working right now for more, maybe 1.2 or 2.0 that that's exciting to know?
So the way we do MERB is that new features will come in major release, so in 2.0. We're going to add a few things along the way, but we're basically planning for 2.0. Something that might happen before 2.0 that's very exciting is Ruby 1.9 Unicode support. So right now, we support internationalization. So if you want to have your website only in Portuguese, only in Spanish, only in French, you can do that. We have full support for that. However, the Unicode support in Ruby 1.8 is pretty bad and is pretty slow. So we have our own version that we extracted from Active Support to handle Unicode. Actually, that's my own library. That's nothing to do with MERB itself. But you can use it in MERB. That's called Multibyte. So if you need to take, let's say, you're dealing with Russian and you want to do some sort of capitalization or you want to reverse the string, if you don't use this kind of library, it's going to break.
Mm-hmm.
But in Ruby 1.9, you have this new type of encoding. So the encoding is dealt with at the language level. And we want to really use this feature to be really fast. We don't want people to pay the penalty of you dealing with Unicode if they don't have to deal with Unicode. So that's why we have this new feature that's coming up. We're also adding more slices. I think that authentication is being expanded. We might use a role system that will be added. We have more slices that are coming up. But we're not going to touch MERB core itself and the main features of MERB until 2.0 because we cannot break the API.
Okay, but for maybe hardcore developers that want to use the equivalent of an Edge MERB, is it a simple matter of the cloning the development trunk or something?
So we have two ways of doing it. You can use Git the way you would use it on GitHub, and you could compile. But that's actually not the recommended way unless you want to contribute back. What we do have is we have an Edge RubyGem server that we run. I think it's edge.merbivore.com. And you can download the latest nightly gems.
Mm.
So you can have the latest version that we do every day, and you can run on them. So you don't have to worry about compiling and building in the gems and stuff like that. You can try what we're working on, the upcoming 1.1 version and this kind of stuff already in this repository, and you can do that. But you should not use that in production yet.
Oh, I see. And from the other technical stuff that I see, MERB has lots of ways for you to create very bare-bone applications. If you don't want anything else, you can create full-featured application, Rails-like, with all the nuts and bolts available. And there is one thing that I was personally behind, that's the usage of Tor. And
okay.
What do you think about Tor, and why was it ingrained within MERB, and what's about it?
So Tor is not something you have to use. Tor is a library that's a bit a mix of between Rec and Sake. So Rec lets you, it's like the Mac of Ruby, so you can do a lot of things, but it's a DSL on top of Ruby. And Sake is a way of having reg tasks that are system-wide available, and you can install them, you can access them anywhere you want. Thor has two main advantages. One, it's in Ruby, so you can have your classes, your module, and you just use normal Ruby code. And the second advantage, well, and you can also install it like a normal reg task, and you can update it. The second advantage is that it has a very nice argument parser. So the problem with Ruby, with reg right now, is if you want to send command options, you need to say reg, and then you need to put a global variable like rails underscore env or merb underscore env equal something. And when you have a lot of arguments, it becomes really challenging. And what we realize is that to be able to bundle your application and to get all the dependencies right and put them into the application, you need to parse, you need to send a lot of information. And Thor let us do that the same way you can do that in normal Linux or normal CLI type application. And that's why we chose Thor. But Thor is really used right now only for deployment and bundling process. Actually, not even deployment. It's just for the bundling. Mm-hmm. We still support reg, and we're still going to support reg, and we have reg task for it. But okay. Thor is a nice option that we have on the side.
Yeah, and I was talking, and Matt was showing Merb to me, and the way I saw it, if you use the full feature generator to create all the default folders, it has a lot of convention over configuration as well. So Railers should feel very, very at home in a Merb project. And even the rake tasks, I think most of them are very familiar, like you have DB migrate. Mm-hmm. And what are the other cool features that someone coming to Merb will see when they generate the projects that's different from Rails?
So I think the Merb stack, so when you do sudo, when you install Merb, so gem mm-hmm. install Merb, and then you generate your first application, what we did is we came up with this concept of the Merb stack, which is basically what 80% of the people building rich internet application would use. And we come up with authentication built in. And we have a very rich authentication system that chains different type of authentication. We also have a Merb exception system. So when there is a problem with your application, it can send you an email, or it can make a post request to a web service. We can send you like a Twitter message or something like that, depending on how you set it up. The other thing that I think people would love when they need to migrate an application is that you can copy and paste your Active Record classes and have them working. And the way we set up the authentication system is that it will be 100% compatible with RESTful authentication. So if you already have a RESTful authentication and you set up like, you know, 5,000 users and you have salted users, so you have a login password and you have a salt, it's fully compatible with it, which I think makes the migration way easier.
Okay, and another stuff is that Rails comes with test unit and the default this default stack that comes in Merb chooses RSpec. For obviously you can change it for SHURA or whatever. Mm-hmm. But what do you feel about RSpec? You're into the bandwagon of RSpec instead of using the plain old test unit.
So I was pushed into the bandwagon of RSpec almost 2 years, maybe more now. Right at the beginning of when RSpec started being used by a lot of people. What I really like with RSpec is that it pushes you to do BDD, so behavior-driven development, and you're going to write your tests and make a lot of sense to you. And I think it's a very, very natural way of writing tests, and we actually wrote all the specs for Merb in RSpec. And during the last RailsConf, we asked somebody, or it was Josh Susser who asked, was using RSpec, and I think 90% of the room was using RSpec. 5% was using Shoulder, and 5% was using Test Unit. And when we were working on the stack, we were like, I think that people would prefer RSpec, and that's something we were able to see. Mm-hmm. And if tomorrow something else comes up, we will probably change to something else as a default based on what people give us. And that's why we need the feedback of people. We need to know what, for instance, the Brazilian community uses, because they might have different needs, different approach, mm-hmm. and they might prefer test units. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, we can actually have a stack. They can have their own stack. Maybe we're going to have a Fabio Akita stack.
that's awesome.
You could have a stack is basically just a file. That's a meta gem that's empty that just says, these are the tools I need. And you just say, I want to use Merb Core, and I want to use Shulda, and I want to use SQL as a database ORM, and let's say I want to use HAML as a default, and that would be on stack. You could just release it as a normal gem, and people could install it and use it.
Mm-hmm. And another thing about testing that I was very interested about is the usage of WebRat for making the equivalent of functional testing. But instead of having a hack to make GET and POST tests, you can actually run through the MERB stack to generate the views and see what's going on in the functional testing. What's the state of this?
So in test units, you have functional and integration testing, if I remember correctly. I didn't use test unit for a long time, but you have this two extra level on top of the normal test unit, the model unit. In RSpec, you have model, control, and view specs. We still support these three levels, but the way we recommend doing it, and we generate an example for you when you generate a resource, we have something we call a request spec. And the request spec test the router, test the controller, and the view at once. And we use WebRat to make sure that the view is rendered properly, but also you can actually fill up a form and submit the form and make sure that you get redirected properly based on the information you enter. You can also verify that everything in the view is properly set. The reason we do that is because often if you use too many mocks inside your controller, you might change your application, but your mock is still the same, and your spec are going to pass, but your app's going to be broken, or vice versa. So what we want to do is to still run through the entire stack in a very efficient way, but to reproduce the real way of a user doing it. The other big advantage we have in doing that is that WebRat can drive Selenium. And Selenium is a way of running the same specs, but inside the browser itself. So what WebRat will do that if you have a test that says, for instance, I send this request that create a new article, right? I should be redirected to the show page, and then if I click on it, I should be able to see the image or whatever the text, specific amount of text. Now you can write this text in your request spec, and that's gonna run, and WebRat simulates a browser, so everything goes in memory. But you can also tell WebRat, actually, I want you to run inside Internet Explorer to make sure it still works, because you know Internet Explorer does not always behave the way you expected it. And maybe your JavaScript is messing up something. So now you will open Internet Explorer or Firefox and run the spec, and you will actually be able to see what's going on in the screen, which I think is very, very useful.
Yeah, that's one thing that I think most of people are used to use Selenium. But Selenium, the way it's usually implemented, it's usually slow and... What the people may not be aware is that WebRat can simulate a browser without the browser. So if you don't have too many JavaScript, too many Ajax magic going on, so WebRat, I think it's the way to go to test this kind of thing.
Yeah, and you don't have to rewrite your code twice. You don't have to write, you know, your application spec and then the Selenium test. You can do all at once. What I personally do is that I run everything in memory, and then once I'm done, I can run it against Selenium or something like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And let's see. I think it covers it up, everything. Is there anything else that you want to remark or comment?
Yeah. As a community, the MERB community really is looking for feedback. We need to know what your local community needs. I know different people have different needs. Being based in the U.S., I get a lot of feedback from people that work, for instance, with startups, and they have different needs, or big companies that need scalability and this kind of stuff. But we need to have a feedback of what your own local community needs. So we really, we're looking forward to hearing what your own local community, wherever you are, needs. And if you have something specific that's not being addressed, come to us, and we're going to change it. If you have a problem with the way we write the code and you have questions, you can come to us and tell us about it. We basically wrote this tool to serve people's needs. We, unlike Rails, which was written as an extraction of an application, we actually wrote that as developers to build out tools we actually need on a daily basis, and we do recognize that people have different needs, and we're not covering all the needs yet. So if you have specific needs, if you have stuff you want to address, if you have stuff you don't like in MERB, please come to us and tell us that you don't like it and tell us how you would want it to change.
Yeah, and for people, just another observation. if you install MERP, it was said that it's important to first update your Ruby gems to 1.3.1.
1.3,
yes. The 1.3 branch, because 1.2 will give you trouble. So first update Ruby gems to 1.3, then gem install MERP, and another tip, --- development in the gem command line, so you can get all the goodies for development as well. And for anyone that wants to learn more about MERP, what are the primary resources on the internet that he should go to learn?
So first I want to say that all these problems with Ruby gems have nothing to do with MERP.
No.
It's just a Ruby gem issue, and that's why you need to upgrade. If you want resources about MERP, we have a great wiki. So the main website is HTTP MERBivore, so that's MERBIVORE.com. We have a wiki there. We also have a documentation. We have different gems, and we have a merge documentation for the stack. Jason Cypher from Rails NV is actually working on a website for documentation that would be a specific MERP documentation website. We also have test examples and stuff like that. You have the IRC channel where we spend a lot of time and we try to answer questions. We have a mailing list. We try to answer every single question as soon as possible. Hopefully, you're going to find people in your local community, in your own local Ruby group that will be able to help you. We also have a PDF that was released by pipcode.com, and they're working on a screencast. We also have three books being written. One is already out. It's called MERP in Action, written by Yehuda Katz. There is another book called The MERP Way that should be released already in PDF, I believe, written by Foy Savas. And there's a third book, and I forgot who was writing it, but I think hopefully we're going to get a book in Portuguese also very soon.
Yeah, I hope so. And all of those books, are they 1.0 compatible?
Yes, all the books were updated for 1.0. Okay. They all cover 1.0. And that's why we don't have a lot of books out yet. A lot of people are working on that. I also offer training. So, of course, you can come to my classes. I offer training with Yehuda Katz, who's the lead developer. I think other people are going to offer training really soon, too. We're going to have more content. We are focusing on documentation right now. That's the big priority. We want an example application. Today I'm going to try to spend some time to write a simple application and to get it out. Glassfish, which is a way of deploying a Java Ruby application, it actually is a very nice example to show how you can write a MERP application without using MERP stack and deploy it on Glassfish. Mm-hmm. NetBeans also, we're working with NetBeans to have full MERP support, and we're probably going to have like a test example inside the MERP Beans IDE.
So. Okay, and there was one more thing that I was almost missing. In your slides, there is that comparison between frameworks about performance. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, so the point of these benchmarks were not to say that we're the best. Turns out we are the best.
Oh, but okay.
That's not really my point tonight. So what I was trying to show is that a lot of people think that Ruby is slow. There is this myth that Ruby is slow because people run Fibonacci tests on language itself, and they say, look, it's really slower than, let's say, PHP, for instance. Turns out that's true. But if you actually benchmark stuff that you do on a daily basis, for instance, a web application, turns out that, for instance, MERP runs actually faster than serving static HTML in Apache. The router of MERP, at least, it's faster, so you can return Hello World. So then we wanted to see and compare that with other benchmarks. So we wrote Hello World's application in different frameworks. We wrote one in CakePHP. We wrote another Hello World in Symfony, another one in CodeIgniter, another one in Rails, another one in Django, another one in MERP. And we benchmarked them the same way. And it turned out that MERP and Rails eat CakePHP for breakfast. So what that means is that Rails is actually more than, I think it's two or three times faster than any of the CakePHP frameworks. So even the fastest PHP framework, which is CodeIgniter, is actually slower than Rails. So when people say that Ruby is slow, Ruby for the web really is not slow. And actually turned out that MERP is even faster than Django. But I was told that I'm using ModPython and I should rerun the benchmark with
WSGI.
Yes, so I'm going to do that. to make sure. But I think it would not make a huge difference. Merv is not crazy faster than Django. It's way faster than Rails. But Django and Merv are pretty close. It's just to give you an idea that basically Ruby is not that slow.
Exactly. And it's not actually for us to bash PHP, but what people don't realize on using frameworks that PHP is way different actually than Ruby, because Ruby has application servers that stays up, so they load the framework once and then they keep answering requests. But PHP has to reload the framework at every request that it serves. So maybe that's the reason why it's so slow.
That's the reason, but at the same time, we tested Merv against raw PHP. So you just do Hello World into a PHP file, right? And we were still faster.
Okay.
But you're right. The reason why the PHP frameworks are slower is because they need to reload the entire framework every request. And, well, in Ruby, we cannot really afford to do that, especially if you use Rails, which is a bigger application that would take a little while. And that's why we optimize the web service tools to actually be the serving of the request in a faster way. So that's why. But the point of this benchmark was, once again, not to show that we're the best and PHP sucks, which I think a lot of people might agree with. but that's, again, not my point. What I wanted to show was that nobody complains that PHP is slow.
Mm-hmm.
And people say Ruby is slow.
Yeah, and then come to the conclusion that people that say the Ruby is slow and the Rails is slow, or Rails don't scale or Ruby doesn't scale, are the novices and the people that are not programmers, actually. They're more marketing people or whatever.
Or they maybe never run the benchmarks. That might be the...
Or they may probably not know how to run a benchmark.
That's also a possibility. The point is that Rails does scale, and Merv does scale better. but Merv scales also in a different way. So if you need to adapt your code itself, you can modify it. It's not a monolithic approach, mm-hmm. So you're very modular.
Yeah, and of course, the mileage may vary depending on the size of the application, the features that are there.
Exactly.
And depends on the load of the database and whatever is hooked up to it. So benchmarks has to be taken with a grain of salt every time.
And exactly. And once again, that's just a Hello World application, so it's not a real world application. We didn't hit the database. We didn't do a lot of stuff. So you cannot just say, oh, in general, Merv is faster than anything else. It is pretty fast. It's the fastest Ruby framework we have right now. But you can write a really bad application in Merv and be really, really slow.
Yeah, and we are going to have a lot of flying tomatoes now from the PHP guys. We have to run. So thank you, Matt. I think that was a great interview, and it was great to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Okay, and I see you guys later. Bye-bye.